All right, let's go. Ecclesiastes, a wildly popular book. It has such a positive message. It's like you just want to read it every year and snuggle up with it with like a, you know, nice warm blanket. It's a warm, fuzzy book. And so we are going to start this series in Ecclesiastes, our first message series for this year of 2017. And let me tell you something, we are going to be in this this book for the next 12, 13, 14 weeks, however long it takes us to get through it. And so we're going to do just like we normally do. We'll read a few verses, talk about it a little bit, read a few more verses, talk about it a little bit, and so on and so forth. You look excited. I'm glad. It's going to be a lot of fun. So success is a passion of our generation. And I would dare say it's been a passion or a goal for almost every generation since the beginning of time, right? I've never met the person that said, you know what? I want to be a loser. You know, my goal in life is to not be successful. It's just to just barely get by. In fact, if I could just reach the bare minimum, hey, I'm your guy. I'm your girl for that one. I've never met someone like that. You see, because we all want to be successful in almost every aspect of our life, do we not? Whether it's at school, whether it is in our family, and whether it is in business, whatever it is that we try to put our hands to, we have this desire to be successful. Or guess what? We wouldn't do it. Well, I mean, why try something if you don't want to put your best foot forward? And so every single one of us have this passion of having some kind of measure of success. Now, the Bible is going to address this topic specifically in five books of what has been labeled as the wisdom literature. It is Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Solomon. And each of these books carry with it its own purpose. The book of Proverbs, if you read through it, it's really a how-to of finding success. If you want to be successful in business or in school or in whatever area of life, Proverbs is kind of like the field guide of success, and you want to go to that book. Psalms is this writing, majority of it, of the schizophrenic king of King David. And I say schizophrenic because, you know, in one chapter he's saying, God, why are you so far from me? I can't feel you. And then in the next chapter, next verse, he's like, oh, you're so close. I can barely breathe. You know, it's kind of like back and forth, back and forth. And I kind of labeled it Psalms as like the high and lows of success. And then you got Song of Solomon. Don't even let me go there, right? It is this quota of this book about how to be successful in the marital relationship. In fact, it's so steamy and so hot. Young Hebrew boys were forbidden to read it until they reached a certain age. Did you know that? My sons are going to be like, Song of Solomon, where is that at? And so you have two books left. You have Job and you have Ecclesiastes. And these two books, Job and Ecclesiastes, they form kind of a lesson from two opposite ends of the spectrum. And all of you should know the story of Job. I'm not going to go into great detail about it. Job loses everything. And when I say everything, I mean everything. His children, his wife, his property, even his health. Now, what happens is, for those of us who have kind of like Job-like experiences, those of us who have suffered, for those of us who don't have a lot of money, for those of us who maybe have sickness, for those of us who maybe have had a hard time in life, here's what we will often say. Well, if life wasn't like this, well, if I only had more money, well, if I only had more power, if I had more friends, if I had a better religion, if my parents weren't so mean, if I'd grown up in a different place, if I could just, and we begin to create in our minds this reality, this better existence that exists somewhere over the rainbow. And that's what happens for those of us who have Job-like experiences. But the problem with that is the book of Ecclesiastes. So here we go. Let's get running. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, beginning in verse 1, the writer says this, the words of the preacher. And in some versions, some translations, this also could be used as teacher. So it could say in the words of the teacher. And so I want to kind of lay out for you right at the beginning, at the start of the gate, that this is more than just a life story. Now, he's going to include some life lessons that he's learned, but this is not a narrative, okay? He's wanting to teach his readers something. There's a topic that he wants to get across. So who is this preacher? Who is this teacher? The son of David, king in Jerusalem. Now, obviously, we don't know for sure, but most scholars and the tradition is that this is Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived. Now, this is why this is important. This is why we have to get this in our head. Because Solomon, if this is the case, Solomon is the ruler, the king of a very prosperous, wealthy, powerful nation. Israel at this time was not someone you wanted to mess with. He has more power, he has more fame, he has more wealth than you or I could ever imagine. Just think of the richest person you can, Gates, Trump, it does not matter. Solomon beats them by far. He has, from the second he was born, privilege and tutors on how life works. So why do I say all that? Because this is not some Joe Blow off the street. This is not some just dude that is rambling here. This is someone who knows what he is talking about. And what does he say? Verse number 2. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities. Now, this word vanity, and once again, in some translations, it has the word meaningless. And if you're going, well, then why did the translators put vanity in there? Well, they put vanity in there because it's really hard to say meaningless of meaninglessness. Right? I can't even say it myself. And so vanity of vanity. And this, listen, church, this is his introduction to his book. This great lesson that he's wanting his readers to know and to learn about. He says, vanity of vanities. He's saying that life is meaningless. Now, I'm sure there's situations that all of us can agree that we think about, well, what's the purpose of that? There are things that happen in life. There are things that are out there that we leave scratching our head that, you know, why didn't God kill all the mosquitoes in the flood? You know, that kind of thing. And it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't have any purpose to it. And we're like, yeah, we get that. But Solomon, this teacher, this preacher, he's taking it a step further. And what is he going to do? He's going to tell us exactly what is vanity. Look at the end of verse number 2. All is vanity. Talk about your Debbie Downer, right? Do you know that word in Hebrew, all? Do you know what that means? All right, some people actually went to bed last night on time. Hebrew, it means all. Everything. There's not one thing in this world that Solomon is saying isn't vain, isn't meaningless. Everything is. Everything, Solomon? Really? Everything? What about marriage? Meaningless. What about pleasure? Meaningless. What about wealth? Meaningless. Everything under the sun, everything that is, Solomon is saying it's meaningless. It's in vain. And we read this book. I read this book. I read this introduction, and I kid you not, don't you just want to give Solomon a hug? Don't you just want to go up to him and say, hey, Solomon, hey, it's okay. I know you maybe had a bad day or a bad week, but I mean, come on. Here, have a seat. Let me make you some cocoa and let's just kind of talk about this and work this out. And he's going to be like this for the rest of the book. He's going to methodically, for the next 12 chapters, take things in life, every aspect of meaning, and then attach to it, it's worthless. It's worthless. It doesn't mean a thing when it's all said and done. In fact, he uses that word vanity, meaningless, that Hebrew word, 38 times in 12 chapters. I'll let you do the math on that. So according to Solomon, according to this teacher, everything is meaningless. Why? Look at verse number 3. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? And here's what Solomon is saying here. Why is life meaningless? Because for all your hard work, because for all your labor, and for all that you do, you die and you leave this place unchanged. for all that you do, for all that you accomplish, whether you wake up at 5 a.m. in the morning or whether you wake up at 10 a.m., no matter what you do, you die and you leave this place unchanged. And there's this philosophy out there, I think it's called empiricism. And it's this idea that the only things that matter on earth is things that can be seen, taste, touched, or heard of. That the only thing that matters are those things that you can experience through the five senses. And it's this philosophy that it's the five senses that make something real and make something right. Now, as believers in Jesus, as Christians, there is this sixth sense. And let me tell you something, it's not seeing dead people, okay? It's something deeper than that. So let's go look at verse number 4. A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north. Around and around goes the wind. And on its circuits, the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they flow again. So what is he getting at right here? He's basically saying life is like a treadmill. You're doing a lot of work. You're putting a lot of effort. Maybe you're sweating. Maybe you're increasing your blood flow, your heart rate. Everything is looking good. But at the end of the day, generations come, generations go. And listen, it all remains the same. Mankind did not go anywhere. Maybe it's a little bit better. Maybe you could be a little bit happier. Maybe things are just tweaked just a little bit. But what he's saying is the sun comes up, the sun goes down, the wind does the same thing every day, and the streams and the oceans, just like nature tells us, it testifies that we are stuck in the circular silliness. And in the circular silliness of life, you and I have found our lives to be somewhat boring and somewhat maybe in a rut. Here's what I mean by that. No matter how hard you work, no matter how much laundry you've done, right? There's always more laundry to do, is there not? I mean, yeah, thank you. I'm getting some testifying in here in the house right now. I mean, I just washed those clothes last week and bam, I got it. They're dirty again. Give me a break. A couple of weeks ago, I was out raking leaves. Guess what? I have to rake leaves again. They're back on the ground. Like, I just did this. Are you kidding me? A couple of weeks ago, right before Christmas, I got my hair cut. Guess what? Hair grows back. I was like, oh my gosh, I got to go get my hair cut again. Are you kidding me? Maybe for some of you today, first day of the year, right? You're having to pay bills. You just paid those bills last month, did you not? And it keeps going and going and going. And it's a circular silliness. And Solomon is saying that this is just exhausting because in the end, it does not matter. Look at verse number 8. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. So he's talking about this non-satisfying existence that you and I can get into this rut, into this circular silliness into. Let me explain it to you this way. Tomorrow morning, you may wake up at 6:30 in the morning. The alarm will go off. You'll get into the shower. You'll get dressed. You'll get in your car. Maybe for some of you, you'll stop off at Starbucks and get that same drink that you get every single day. And you'll fight your way through traffic. Lord have mercy. Good. I'm glad they got done with the construction on 169, right? I mean, it was just a mess. I was like, every time I took the boys to school, I was like, I'm glad I don't have to go down 169 because that was crazy going southbound. And so we fight traffic and we go to our workplace and guess what? We work until lunch, do we not? Maybe doing the same thing that we've done week in and week out. And we go to lunch and then we have lunch and maybe we have the same kind of lunch that we had yesterday or last week. And at lunch, you'll eat that same thing. And maybe you'll have lunch with friends or you'll hang out with your coworkers. And then after lunch, you go back to work and you do your work. And maybe at 5 or 6, you'll start heading home. You might stop off at the gym, work out, maybe not. You'll go home, eat dinner, watch the same TV shows, get ready for bed. And guess what? The cycle starts all over again the next morning. Same TV shows, same life, same bed. I mean, it's more like the film Groundhog Day, if I'm dating myself, then most of us would like to admit. So there are people, and maybe you're one of them, that try to pretend their lives aren't into this rut. And let me show you. Solomon will tell us how they do that. Look at verse number 9. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which it is said, see, this is new? It has been already in the ages before us. So he goes, listen, people, you're trying to say that your life isn't meaningless. You're trying to say that it isn't vain, that you're not stuck in this kind of circular boredom and in this rut. And the way you do that is that you try to get trinkets. You try to introduce some spice and some whatever pizzazz into your life, something new. And what Solomon is saying is that is not new. It's been done before. What he's getting at is really that all those trinkets and all that pizzazz and all that spice that you try to add to your life that makes you feel like your life means more than what it is. He's basically saying is that is all a deceptive part of the circular silliness that we find ourselves in, that try to deceive us that our lives aren't in a rut. Listen, I'm including myself in this, right? We just celebrated Christmas, did we not? Well, I did. I don't know about you guys. I did. I celebrate Christmas. And it's a weird thing, is it not, that when you get something new, doesn't it feel better? Doesn't for some reason you feel better? my brother-in-law, he bought me this Drake over jacket wind whatever thing. It's, you know, Real Max Tree 5. It's for waterfowl hunting, for those of you that don't know, okay? And Drake is like real top of the line. It's like really nice. Listen, I put that sucker on. I was like, I'm going to kill me some ducks. I don't, Mamaw can pray all she wants. I'm going to kill. Right? It makes you feel different. You get something new and it makes you feel different, but only for a while. Because next year I'm going to look at that same over hoodie or whatever it is, and I'm going to look at it and be like, you know what, that's kind of old. I need something new. And we do this time and time again, where we think that if we get something new, it changes us just for a moment. But that's all it is. It's just for a moment. And Solomon is saying, look, you're trying to deceive yourself. You're trying to act like those new things actually mean something, but it doesn't mean anything. Give me a break. They're trinkets. That's just it. Nothing has changed in your life. So you got the newest and greatest thing. Hey, congratulations. Good for you. Woohoo. But listen, you got the same new thing last year. And what Solomon is saying is that generations that have come before us, thousands of years past, they've fallen into the same kind of rut. There's nothing new. You're deceiving yourselves. Now, follow with me, if you would, just for a moment, because the danger in this fact is that we live in a very affluent city. I'm talking about Owosso, okay? I don't know about the surrounding cities, but I'm talking about the Owosso proper. If you look at the demographics, if you look at the census numbers, we are on average a very upper middle class, white collared kind of city. And I'm not saying that all of us fall into that category, but I'm just saying on average, that's what we are in. The dominant income is upper middle class. And the danger that we find ourselves in is that because of this, we fall into the trap of thinking that having the new car or having the new house or the new toys or the new wives or the new husbands or anything that you can add to it, we think that that will add meaning to our lives. But what Solomon's saying is there's nothing new. There's nothing new under the sun. It's meaningless. No change of work, no change of job, no change of increased income. Come on, somebody. It does not matter. It's not going to make things better inside of you. There's only one person that can do that. But I know, because here's the type A personalities out there, right? Not me. Not me. Hey, you're talking about someone else. I will make a dent. I will make significant contribution to this world. And listen, it's almost as if the Spirit knew you were going to be thinking that, because look at where Solomon goes right in verse number 11. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of latter things yet to be among those who come after. What's Solomon's answer? He's saying, guess what? You're going to die and no one's going to remember you. I mean, think about it. Who in this room can tell me their great, 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 great grandfather's name? One person. Two people. I'll even go back. I'll make it easy. How about your great, great? Maybe you know your great, but great, great? Few more. You see my point? You see what Solomon is trying to get at here? You're going to pass on, and there's going to be no remembrance of you. Aren't you glad you came to church this morning? That's verse number 12. Here we go. Stay with me, because we're going somewhere here in the next 10 minutes. Verse number 12. I, the preacher, have been king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted. So let me stop right there and try to explain it like this. He's saying, I, Solomon, with all my resources and all that I have learned, I've come to this conclusion. So if you remember that when David died and Solomon became king, God came to Solomon in a dream and he said, Solomon, you can have whatever you want. Just ask me and I'll give it to you. And what did Solomon ask for? He asked for wisdom. He said, who can lead this great people of yours? I need wisdom. And God was so impressed with Solomon's answer that he said, you know what? I'm not only going to give you wisdom, I'm going to give you everything else that you didn't ask for. Wealth, power, prestige. And so this is what Solomon has just said. I, King Solomon, wealthy, wise, powerful, set out to discover all that is occurring on this earth. And here's what he's going to do. He's going to use his five senses, taste, touch, seeing, hearing, and smelling. And he's going to use his five senses along with all his wealth, all his power, and all his wisdom. And he's going to use that and apply it to discover what is the meaning of life. He's going to use it to find out the six things that are favorite among men. The six things being wealth and power, friends, work, pleasure, and finally, religion. Solomon's going to use all his resources to discover what life is all about. It's kind of like his own little experiment that he has. And when he's all said and done, he's going to come to this conclusion that it's meaningless. Look at verse 16. I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. Basically, he's saying that if you think I'm a liar, I'm going to remind you that I'm smarter than you. I'm more powerful than you. And I have more women than you. Come on, right? He's saying that anything that you think you are, how hot you think you've become, guess what? I'm 10 times better than you. And so he's trying to say that with his credentials. He said, listen, trust me on this. I know. Verse 17. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is but a striving after wind. For in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. So here's what he says in these last few verses. What he's getting at is he's saying, I went to the highbrow route first. He's saying, I decked out my house. I marbled everything. I encrusted everything with gold and with silver. I ate caviar. I drank Cristal. I went to the opera. I went to all the right parties and all the right clubs. I spent my wealth and my power on what I wanted to do. I did everything my heart was content with. I did all of it, and I found it to be meaningless, vain. And then he goes to the opposite end of the spectrum. He says, you know what? I found some redneck buddies of mine as well. And I went out and I hung out with them and I burned stuff and I shot stuff and I drank old Milwaukee beer, you know, and all the, I mean, you just get the image in your, watch NASCAR, ate macaroni and cheese and hamburger that stirred up in the pot. He goes, I did all that as well. I went to the opposite end of the spectrum. I did all that as well. And he said, it's meaningless. It's vain. Now look at what he's attacking here. Look at what he's getting at. He's saying, listen, I lived a wealthy, complex life. And guess what? That isn't the answer. And then he's saying on the other end, I've also had nothing and life was unbelievably simple and it was still vain. It was still meaningless. But what do we do? If you find yourself, and I just covered probably everyone in this church, if we're poor and we don't have money, what do? Oh, if I just had more money. If I just had a little bit more, everything would be good. And if we have the money, guess what we say? Oh, if my life wasn't so complex and if I just had a little bit less and my life would be good. And Solomon's looking at both groups. He's saying, I've done both of them. And let me tell you the conclusion I've come to. It's worthless. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mean anything. Now, after this, you're probably saying to yourself, I thought church was supposed to be happy. This is a place to find hope. Some of you in here, I thought about this. Some of you in here are probably not bothered with this message at all because you're going to use this all week, right? Honey, are you going to go out and rake the leaves? Why should I? It's vain. It's meaningless. Vanity, vanity. You heard the pastor. It's worthless. I'm not even going to go to work tomorrow. Who cares? Right? Vanity, vanity. And some of you are probably like, you know, this is horrible, John David. I came to church, man. We had a good night last night. You know, this morning we had a great morning as a family. It's the start to 2017. And we're talking about how things have started to come together and how this year is going to be like mind blowing. And then bam, you're like, everything stinks. Hate it all. Listen, there's something that Solomon is doing. And I think the Spirit in particular, there's something that the Spirit is doing and that we're going to keep coming back to every week until this message is over with. Until you're really ready to honestly evaluate your life under the sun. Until you're ready to look at your life and look at what the real meaning there is or the lack of meaning there may be. Until you're ready to do that, listen, church, you are going to be stuck on the treadmill. But if you're going to finally slow down long enough to analyze your life and look at your life, my prayer is that you're going to come to the same conclusion that Solomon will come to. And this is this development of the sixth sense. You see, the problem with the five senses is that they look at everything that's here on earth. But what Solomon is going to make the argument in this book, in order for your life to have meaning, in order for your life to have purpose, you're going to have to develop that sixth sense that is not found under the sun. It's found above it. John 10:10, Jesus tells us this, that I've come to give you life and life full or life abundantly. And what Christ is saying is this, is that up to this point, you've been merely living. Up to this point, you've been merely existing. But in me, there is life. And I have come so that you may have life. Life that you were created for. Life that now has purpose and has meaning. And now because of Christ, all these things suddenly do have meaning. Do you see that apart from Christ, they mean nothing. But when Christ gets involved and Christ becomes the center of your life, all those things now have a purpose behind it. Because now money's not just money so that you can buy new things and feel good about yourself for about 5 minutes. No, money now becomes a tool that you use to affect the kingdom for God. It's not about social status. It's not about just having things. It's about having purpose. You see, it becomes us owning those things instead of those things owning us. You see, Christ removes the futility and the vanity from our soul and brings about the purpose that all of us, he brings about the purpose that all of us are dying for. Everything under the sun is like a treadmill. And my hope, my prayer for you as we start out this year, 2017, is that you'll honestly evaluate your life and that you will look beyond the sun and that you might develop even more fully that sixth sense, your faith, your relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. Let's pray. Father, I thank you because you do bring meaning and you bring hope where there was no hope. That is the message that you have entrusted to us. Father, I pray for every single person under the sound of my voice that they can be broken free of those things that so easily entangle us, of those things that we constantly strive for but have no meaning. Father, I pray for everyone as we're about to take communion, that in this moment, that we just slow down, that we look at our lives, and we do a self-evaluation of where we say, okay, God, where have I taken you out? And in those areas, Lord Jesus, that we have taken you out, I pray that we put you back in. I pray that you become the center this year, the center of all we are and all that we have. So that no matter what happens, whether we're on the mountaintop or whether we find ourselves in the valley, it has no meaning because without you, we are nothing. But with you, it has purpose. So we look forward to this year and we look forward to how you're going to use us. But it all begins in this moment of centering ourselves and putting you back as first in our lives. For it's in your son's name I pray. Amen.